Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Well, with everyone remembering Mike Wallace, we want to spend a few minutes at the end of our show today on one particular thing about his legacy, the thing that gets mentioned as his professional black eye, the thing he says made him clinically depressed, the lawsuit by Vietnam War General William Westmoreland accusing CBS and Wallace of libel. But Wallace's story on CBS News called The Uncounted Enemy and a Vietnam Deception, about Westmoreland lying to the American people, well, Mike Wallace was largely vindicated. So let's talk about this episode. An adjunct professor at the Columbia University of Graduate School of Journalism, David Blum, is with us now. He's the author of the book Tick, 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 The Long Life and Turbulent Times of 60 Minutes. To talk about that controversy, its impact, and Mike Wallace's legacy, he is also the editor of Kindle Singles. That's Amazon's short-form publishing venture. David Blum, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you.
Remind us what this documentary was about and why it sparked a lawsuit.
Well, the documentary was actually conceived by a producer who had worked with Wallace named George Kreil, who had uncovered evidence that Westmoreland had misrepresented the size and strength of the Viet Cong guerrilla forces during the Vietnam War, and was putting together a documentary for quite some time. And he basically needed, as documentaries did and still do, a public face, someone to do some of the interviews, to provide the narration. So we went to Mike Wallace, who, you know, had been on 60 Minutes already for many years, to be the face of the documentary. And it aired on back then documentaries aired on Saturday nights at 9:30, and which, believe it or not, was a good time slot in those days.
That is amazing.
Yeah, I mean, that in and of itself.
What do you want to do on Saturday night? Let's stay home and watch a documentary about lying on war.
Yeah, exactly. And they got good numbers. It's incredible. So
here's 20 seconds of Mike Wallace from the intro to that documentary so that people have a little bit of context. The audio on this is not great, but you can make it out. Mike Wallace from that documentary's introduction.
From my point of view, going into that libel trial, I damn well knew that the broadcast was accurate.
Yeah, I'm sorry, that's the wrong clip. We'll get the right clip up and play it in just a minute. So why don't you pick up on the story of the airing of the documentary and what the libel suit was about?
Well, it aired and, you know, caused an immediate firestorm. Westmoreland claimed it was all untrue, went to various other media outlets to carry out this campaign against Wallace and CBS News. TV Guide jumped on the bandwagon. They ran a piece called The Anatomy of a Smear. So suddenly Wallace, who basically had phoned in his involvement with this documentary, was in the eye of this huge firestorm, which included Westmoreland filing a multimillion dollar libel suit against CBS News. And at the same time, a new president had just come in to run CBS News. So Wallace found himself completely on the defensive. CBS launched an investigation to see what mistakes had been made. The investigation took Wallace to task for basically not really being involved in this thing and having conducted interviews without really knowing the facts of the piece. They never were able to really find anything substantively wrong with it. It actually wasn't a smear. And in fact, the TV Guide piece, which called itself The Anatomy of a Smear, really didn't have any evidence to prove that it was. But, you know, this was one of Wallace's first steps outside the world of 60 Minutes and into the documentary area, and it was, you know, just a total disaster for him from a public relations standpoint.
Here he is in the documentary. Now we've got that clip, 20 seconds of Mike Wallace introing the piece.
The fact is that we Americans were misinformed about the nature and the size of the enemy we were facing. And tonight we're going to present evidence of what we have come to believe was a conscious effort, indeed a conspiracy at the highest levels of American military intelligence, to suppress and alter critical intelligence on the enemy in the year leading up to the Tet Offensive.
So how much of that was actually vindicated in court when Westmoreland took them to court for libel? Was there a conscious effort, indeed a conspiracy at the highest levels of American military intelligence, to suppress and alter critical evidence on the enemy in the year leading up to the Tet Offensive in the Vietnam War?
Well, you haven't said it with quite the conviction that Mike Wallace did. I mean, the beauty of Mike Wallace is he could say anything and make you believe it. But the fact is he never got vindicated. The case got dropped. Westmoreland ultimately decided not to pursue it, which, you know, CBS took as a victory, Wallace took as a victory. But the fact is there was never any incontrovertible proof presented beyond, you know, that powerful intonation of Wallace's voice claiming conspiracy. He could convince you with the tone of his voice as much as he could with the amount of his evidence. But the interesting thing was that at that point in his career in the early 80s, he was already being attacked all over the place for his aggressive techniques. I mean, you know, we look back on him with such adulation and, you know, deserved, but the fact is for many, many years, especially at that time, he was being ridiculed and attacked for being this bulldog, you know, gotcha journalism, you know, even CBS was backing off its support of Wallace at that point. So it was a rough time, and it ended up, as he himself has admitted, driving him into psychiatry and ultimately into medication for what was ultimately determined to be a pretty serious case of depression.
But tell me if my understanding of the history is wrong. Didn't the case get settled just before it was going to go to the jury because the Westmoreland side felt that they were going to lose and they didn't want William Westmoreland's actions in the Vietnam War to be found at fault by an actual jury in an actual courtroom, and so they backed off, and that did basically vindicate the content of the documentary? Or wouldn't you say it went down like that?
Well, I mean, I wouldn't say, well, it wasn't settled. They dropped the case, it's true, and the perception was that it was dropped because Westmoreland didn't want to follow through and didn't want to risk losing. But I don't think it's the kind of vindication that Wallace wanted. You know, I mean, he went out for a big celebration at 21 with Dan Rather. You know, he pretended as though he was thrilled, but he really wasn't, because the only vindication that would have meant anything would have been to go to trial and win. You know, not having a trial, not having the facts played out in a public forum. You know, no one ever really knew for sure. And as I say, at that point, it was easy to taint Wallace. He was an aggressive figure who had stirred up a tremendous amount of animosity everywhere he went. You know, he's lionized now, but it's that old saying, I think, from Chinatown, you know, even ugly buildings and whores become respectable after a certain amount of time. But at that time, I'm not saying he was in that category, but he was certainly not the beloved figure that he's become. He was highly controversial. In this case, I think it really threw him off, you know, to be attacked so fundamentally.
And for
something that he hadn't reported himself.
Yes, and I guess that's the love-hate relationship that we have with this kind of journalism. On the one hand, we decry gotcha journalism and we say it's shallow. On the other hand, we say it's hard hitting and nobody does that anymore and everything's so timid.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I saw David Remnick from The New Yorker say a couple days ago about Wallace, you know, boy, this is the kind of thing that print journalists just don't do and can't do and maybe shouldn't do, and we have discomfort with it. And while I understand that, it's kind of, it makes me sad in a way that the legacy of Wallace hasn't been carried forward by journalists, and they aren't as aggressive as he was, and they weren't willing to take the risks of having people, you know, hate them and question them. I mean, the fact of the matter is he was questioned and hated and reviled by a ton of people, but no one ever fundamentally proved his journalism wrong.
Do we have a certain kind of equivalent in our polarized opinion networks today? They're certainly playing gotcha with the people they want to get night after night.
Well, they are, but in a different way. You know, the way Wallace played the game was he assembled the evidence. He had a team of producers. He'd, nail the story down. He'd have all the facts gripped in his hand. Then he'd knock on the door and say, "I'm Mike Wallace. Here's the evidence. You're a bad guy. What do you have to say for yourself?" The gotcha journalism today isn't really journalism. It's just, you know, catching somebody on camera saying something stupid.
David Blum wrote the book Tick, 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 The Long Life and Turbulent Times of 60 Minutes. He teaches at the Columbia University Graduate School of Journalism and is the editor of Kindle Singles, Amazon's short-form publishing venture. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you.